It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where it is 35 degrees. We're still expecting a high of 41 today, with rain and north winds 15, turning to the south this afternoon. More rain tonight, mainly before 9 p.m. Steady temperatures around 39 overnight. Southeast winds to 15, becoming southwest after midnight. For Friday, chance of rain and snow showers before noon, then scattered rain and snow showers, mostly cloudy skies and high near 40. For New Year's Eve, scattered rain and snow showers before 9, mostly cloudy skies, low of 17 for New Year's Eve. Northwest wind to 10, increasing to 20 after midnight. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Omicron variant is in Alaska. Two people from St. Paul are accused of homicide. And an update on the big storm in the interior.
Live from NPR News, I'm Barbara Klein. The U.S. continues to report a record number of coronavirus cases amid the rapid spread of the Omicron variant. Yesterday brought an all-time high of nearly 500,000 confirmed infections. NPR's Michaeline Duclef reports hospitalizations have also increased, but nowhere near as much as cases have.
In the past week, COVID cases have risen about 75%, largely because of the new Omicron variant, which spreads very fast. But hospitalizations have gone up only about 12%. Dr. Robi Bhattacharya at Harvard Medical School says this difference makes the Omicron variant look like it causes less severe disease. But for people who aren't vaccinated, data suggests Omicron is just as severe as earlier variants of the virus.
It's still going to find people who don't have immunity. And in fact, I think it's going to find them faster just because it spreads faster.
Thus, in the long run, Bhattacharya says, the U.S. could have more hospitalizations during this surge than this initial data suggests. Michaeline Duclef, NPR News.
The Texas Juvenile Justice Department is requesting help from the state's National Guard amid fresh coronavirus outbreaks. Paul Flav of Texas Public Radio reports.
More than two dozen staff at five secure youth detention sites in Texas have been diagnosed with COVID-19, facilities that have been criticized in the past for understaffing. The Justice Department launched an investigation into these facilities in October. The Texas Juvenile Justice Department requested help from emergency managers to keep staffing above minimum levels. The Texas National Guard says it provided a half dozen guard members per 12-hour shift at two of the state's facilities Tuesday, with more help coming to other facilities later this week. State juvenile justice officials say guards will assist in transportation, meal service, medical assistance, and supply runs, but will not deal directly with youth. I'm Paul Flav in San Antonio.
President Biden is talking with Russian President Vladimir Putin on the phone this hour. The White House says Putin requested the call as tensions mount over Russia's troop buildup on the Ukraine border. Former Afghan President Ashraf Ghani says his decision to flee his country in August, when coalition forces were pulling out, was last minute, just after his security forces told him they could no longer protect him or the capital, Kabul. Ghani, who's now in exile in the UAE, says he understands being blamed for Afghanistan's fall to the Taliban.
The blame is totally understandable. What? They rightly blame me for, they were totally right, as I trusted in our international partnership and pursued that path. All of us made a huge mistake in assuming that the patience of the international community would last.
Ghani spoke on BBC. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Coast Guard cutter Midget has extended its stay in Kodiak. Dylan Smart has these details.
The Coast Guard cutter Midget has been tied up in City Port for about a week. The Coast Guard Pacific Area confirmed Wednesday the cause of the extended visit, a COVID-19 outbreak. The Coast Guard would not comment on the planned duration of its stay or the extent of the outbreak, but did say the ship was following the onboard pandemic plan. It is unclear whether cases aboard the Midget may have been factored into the recent high COVID count for the Kodiak Island borough. The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 53 new COVID-19 cases from December 22nd to December 29th, with 25 of those being non-resident travel-related cases. Legend-class cutters like the 418-foot Midget are some of the largest vessels in the Coast Guard fleet. They occasionally make their way up to Alaska for security patrols or to participate in Operation Arctic Shield. According to the official Coast Guard Cutter Midget Facebook page, the Kodiak Coast Guard Spouses Association delivered baked goods to the cutter on Christmas Eve. The Cutter Midget is based in Honolulu, Hawaii. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
As the Omicron variant of the coronavirus spreads in Alaska, state public health officials say their systems for monitoring and responding continue to adapt to the latest science, the needs of Alaskans, and the resources available. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports that deciding to end free COVID-19 lab tests for travelers at airports was just one piece of that.
The state has contracts ending on January 31st that let travelers at many Alaska airports get free lab tests for COVID-19. It's part of a wider push to use more rapid, at-home test kits in general, which impacts other public health systems officials have been using to manage the pandemic.
And so this is part of communicating and sharing with this public the transition that we are going through.
That's Heidi Hedberg, the director of the state's Division of Public Health. She used the word transition 7 times during our interview. The upshot of home rapid tests is they're faster, more convenient, and much less expensive than lab tests. The downside is that these tests, you might hear them called antigen tests, aren't as sensitive. So you're really supposed to use both tests in a given kit over 36 hours to be confident about a negative result. Also,
there is no easy mechanism for that individual to report their positive test.
So a case caught through a home test is only captured in the state's pandemic data if it's voluntarily reported. And that means case count data won't necessarily be complete. But state epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin says lab tests aren't going away, which do feed into the state's case counts. That data is still valuable to track case trends over shorter periods of time. To assess risk, there's other data, which the state intends to keep reporting.
The data on hospitalization and death really won't change. That will still be, robust data that we will use to help also monitor morbidity and mortality rates.
In Juneau, for example, the head of the city's pandemic response says he's putting more weight on how burdened the medical system is. Early on in the pandemic, high case counts necessarily meant higher hospitalizations and deaths. But at this point, more effective treatments are available, and vaccines and prior infections mean there are fewer severe cases. In other words, communities can tolerate higher case counts now than they could in 2020. The convenience of home test kits also comes with the responsibility of tracing one's own contacts.
We're really relying heavily on Alaskans to do the right thing with respect to self-isolation if they're positive, following the guidance there, and then notifying their own close contacts if they do come up positive so that their close contacts can appropriately quarantine if they're unvaccinated.
The supply of home tests has shot up over the last year, but so has demand.
We also know that there's going to be a limited supply chain constraints on occasion. That's just part of this pandemic and what we have been experiencing over the past 2 years. I anticipate that that's going to continue in 2022.
Hedberg says retailers also have home kits for sale and more market options may be coming.
We've heard from a lot of the private sector that they're interested in really establishing their own business and offering these antigen tests at low costs, which is really great because from a public health standpoint, we want to ensure that there is access to testing.
Meanwhile, the total confirmed count of COVID-19 cases caused by the fast-spreading Omicron variant in Alaska is up to 6 as of Tuesday afternoon.
We're bracing for an Omicron wave. Many states in the U.S. are already dealing with a substantial Omicron wave. Our hope is to get through that wave as quickly as we can. The best way to prepare for it is to get vaccinated if you're not already vaccinated, to get boosted, get a booster dose of the vaccine if you're eligible.
McLaughlin says it's also time to step up our masking practices.
With masking, probably just a single layer cloth face covering is not really going to be good enough to help prevent infection. It might help a little bit. Certainly when somebody's coughing or sneezing, it really does trap those larger respiratory droplets from getting out into the air. But it's better to have a two-ply mask.
McLaughlin says it's important that masks fit well. The better the fit, the better the filtration. For crowded, high-risk situations, McLaughlin recommends N95 respirators, which are no longer in short supply. There have been some indications that the Omicron variant may be less dangerous than earlier variants, but McLaughlin says it's too soon to conclude that. At some point, McLaughlin says these coronaviruses will eventually become endemic, meaning
it will be a part of the whole group of respiratory viruses that we deal with on a regular basis. We will eventually develop such a high level of prior immunity through vaccination and through prior infection. The virus will likely continue to morph and change over time. The hope is that it will change in the direction of becoming less and less virulent over time.
But McLaughlin and Hedberg say for the foreseeable future, the state's emergency management systems are not scaling back, just transitioning. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Two people from St. Paul are accused of killing a toddler who was in their care, according to a report yesterday from the Alaska State Troopers. Earlier this month, 2-year-old Joshua Rukuvishnikov was medevaced to an Anchorage hospital with a serious head injury, according to the trooper report. He died at the hospital, and his remains were sent to the state medical examiner for autopsy. Troopers say that after a thorough investigation, they determined that the child's guardians, 31-year-old Stephen Molodovov and 28-year-old Sophie Myers Molodovov, had killed him in their home and attempted to mislead investigators over the course of the investigation. They were both arrested on Tuesday on charges of first-degree murder and were booked into the Anchorage Correctional Complex. This is the second murder investigation in a matter of months in the remote island community of about 350 people. The toddler's mother died in St. Paul in late September, and his father faces manslaughter and second-degree murder charges in her death. Before that, there hadn't been any homicides on the island since 2006, according to local police. The interior is digging out from a second major storm this week. The Fairbanks area picked up nearly a foot of additional snow Tuesday and Wednesday. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
The new snow was accompanied by high winds that caused drifting. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Bryce Ward says plowing operations are trying to catch up.
It is still going to be some time before all of our roads are cleared.
According to the State Department of Transportation, crews focused Wednesday on opening up access, but cautioned of narrow lanes until they can get back and fully clear roadways. The situation is worse outside of town, including over Stees Highway summits, where work continues to open up the road and get plows beyond to Central and Circle. Meanwhile, several hundred Golden Valley Electric customers remained without electricity as of last night due to storm-bent and broken trees on power lines and poles. Robert Altman and his wife are among Eielson Farm Road area residents who haven't had power since Sunday.
The only thing that's been helping us is we have a little Craftsman generator.
Altman says the 2,200-watt portable generator is enough to keep their Toyo stove heater and other essentials powered.
I also raise chickens, so we have our chicken coop plugged in. And then we alternate the plug-ins for the refrigerator. We go and get water from the regular water place like everybody else. My wife's been cooking on a little butane cook stove.
Altman says 9 area power poles located well off the road are damaged.
They need a bulldozer to get to where the poles are.
The Eielson Farm Road outage is one of over 100 Golden Valley Electric Association is working to fix. A GVEA post says the utility has 18 crews in the field and 9 more coming up from Anchorage with the goal of restoring service to all customers by late tomorrow. It notes that some customers have sustained damage to private power equipment that GVEA is not responsible for. Temperatures are forecast to cool, and Mayor Ward says the borough's Emergency Operations Center is working with the Red Cross
to provide housing vouchers for folks that are without power, that are not able to get that power resecured.
Mayor Ward said no one had requested assistance as of last night, but encourages people to check on their neighbors.
If they see driveways without tracks in them, or their neighbors' lights have been off for an extended period of time.
While borough emergency and road service operations are functioning, many other borough services, including library and recreation, remain shut down due to storm impacts. The weather pattern that funneled so much moisture into the interior is shifting, and no additional storms are forecast. National Weather Service meteorologist Bobby Bianco says Fairbanks' December 2021 snowfall is nearing a record.
We've had around 47 inches of snow, the second snowiest on record.
There's a chance of a little light snow, which could push Fairbanks past the December record of 50.4 inches set in 1984. The last week has included both snow and rain, and Bianco says this month's total water equivalent of 6 inches of precipitation is already a Fairbanks December record.
Astronomically high. It's definitely top three wettest months on record, including summer months.
December snow and rain have also helped make 2021 Fairbanks' wettest year. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
An Alaska Native nonprofit organization has received a $2.9 million grant to start building a totem pole trail along Juneau's waterfront. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute says the grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation will cover 10 poles. The Institute's longer-term goal is to have 30 poles in place. Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian master carvers will teach apprentices their art as they carve poles in their communities around the southeast. The poles will tell the history of the clans. Clans will select their own crests and designs. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is working on finding funding for the remaining 20 poles. Staff shortages due to the coronavirus and bad weather have combined to snarl air traffic this week, and it's left a lot of Alaskans stranded. The double whammy affects all domestic airlines, but Alaska Airlines is among the hardest hit due to a heavy snow in Seattle, its hub. As Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, as of Wednesday, Alaska Airlines had canceled 179 flights.
Unclaimed luggage was piling up at baggage claim in Anchorage. Some travelers tell of grumpy, impatient airport crowds in Seattle. Alaska Airlines reports that hold times on its phone lines are up to 20 hours. Chris Diamond, a union organizer from Anchorage, was stuck at the Fairbanks Airport studying the flight schedules. His first flight never arrived.
And I am now rebooked on, I don't remember which flight it is. It's supposed to leave Anchorage here in about 15 minutes, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
That flight was canceled, too. Diamond is less than 400 miles from home, where he hopes to spend his birthday and greet the new year. But renting a car wasn't an option.
Because the road conditions were so bad, they weren't renting anybody cars.
Meanwhile, his 19-year-old daughter is about to fly from Bozeman to Juneau.
So I'm trying to coordinate a contingency plan for her as well, because she has to go through Seattle. So it's been a hectic day.
Diamond urged her to delay her trip until the Seattle backlog clears, but his daughter is determined.
Well, I just wonder that she could be spending some time on the sleeping on the airport floor for a few days, so make sure to bring a pillow and a little blanket there with her travel bag.
Diamond got the last seat on a flight due to leave Fairbanks in the afternoon. This one's a 737. Diamond is pretty confident. Anchorage residents Jennifer Sauna and her husband called on relatives when their connecting flight in Atlanta was canceled on Monday. She knows how lucky they are.
You know, if my aunt didn't live here in Atlanta, it would have been hotels and possibly a rental car and all of those expenses incurred. Or, you know, we could have stayed in the airport and that would have been a pretty uncomfortable situation.
Well, first of all, I just want to start by saying how sorry we are.
Marilyn Romano is the regional vice president for Alaska Airlines based in Anchorage. She says she knows thousands of people are affected, some severely.
Particularly during holiday times when people have waited sometimes maybe up to 2 years now to be together. and then to have their travel plans disrupted by something like this.
Romano has some suggestions. Delay all unnecessary travel until January 3 or later. Rebook online, not by phone. If your flight is canceled, go to baggage claim for your luggage before you leave the airport. Romano says airline staff are working to get everyone where they need to go.
I've heard great stories of kindness shown to our employees by our guests, and it is appreciated.
As for Chris Diamond in Fairbanks, well, the 737 was delayed, but he was still hopeful he'd make it home before his birthday. Reporting from Washington, but in solidarity with my fellow flying Alaskans, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is once again asking Americans to avoid cruise ship travel. With the emergence of the Omicron variant, federal health officials say that even fully vaccinated passengers can catch and spread COVID-19. On Thursday, the CDC raised the risk level for cruise ship travel to level 4, its highest level, which means even vaccinated travelers should avoid cruise ships. At the previous level, the CDC was only warning unvaccinated people against cruise ship travel. There are almost 100 ships with COVID-19 on board that the CDC is currently investigating. All cruise ships are sailing in the U.S. waters under a so-called conditional sailing order, which means that the cruise ship companies have to comply with certain safety regulations and have agreements with the U.S. ports where they dock. That order has been extended until January 15th. There is a full slate of cruise ships scheduled to visit Alaska in 2022. The first large ship will arrive in Juneau at the end of April.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. January marks the start of Alaska's largest fisheries. I'll tell you more after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Salmon will always be the heart of Alaska's fisheries. That's why many people think of summer as the fishing season. But that's not the case. The heart of winter is when Alaska's largest fisheries get underway each year. Starting on January 1st, hundreds of boats begin plying the waters of the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska for Pacific cod, rockfish, and other groundfish. Then on January 20th, trawlers take to the seas to target Alaska pollock, the world's largest food fishery. Crab boats will soon be out on the Bering Sea in earnest for snow crab. Early March sees the start of the halibut and sablefish seasons. March also marks the beginning of Alaska's roe herring circuit, usually at Sitka Sound, and those fisheries will continue for several months, all the way up the coast as far west as Norton Sound, assuming there are herring buyers. And although wild Alaska king salmon is available from southeast trawlers nearly year-round, mid-May marks the official start of Alaska's salmon season with the runs of kings and reds at the Copper River. Salmon fisheries take center stage all summer and into the fall. That's followed by another of Alaska's fishing highlights in October, crab openers in the Bering Sea. And so it goes on through the end of each year. And add in shrimp fisheries, sea cucumbers, clams, kelp, and many more. In all, more than 5 billion pounds of seafood crosses Alaska's docks each year, worth more than $2 billion to fishermen. The seafood industry is Alaska's largest private employer. Alaska's fishermen and processors provide over 60% of our nation's wild-caught seafood. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 30th day of December, 2021. The sun rose today at 9:53. It will set again at 4:31. That will give us 6 hours and 37 minutes of daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 20 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 3 degrees, set in 1979, and our record high was 54, set in 1967. Currently 37 degrees out at the airport, and they are showing wind speeds from the east at 5 miles per hour. They're calling for rain for the rest of the afternoon up until 9 p.m. tonight. High near 41 tonight, but a low of only 39 overnight. Southeast winds to 15 today are expected to turn, no, to continue at southeast and go to 15, oh, to turn to the southwest after midnight. Chance of rain and snow for tomorrow before noon, then scattered rain and snow showers. Mostly cloudy skies for New Year's Eve with a high of 40. For Friday night, look for scattered rain and snow showers before 9 p.m., mostly cloudy skies with a low of 17 for New Year's Eve. Northwest wind increasing to 20 after midnight. And for New Year's Day, scattered snow showers after 3 p.m., but partly sunny skies after that. High near 27 for New Year's Day. Northwest wind to 40, gusting up to 45. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 5:27 this evening. That will be minus 3/10 of a foot, followed by a high tide at 11:54 p.m., almost midnight, of 6.7 feet. Our next low tide will be at 4:54 a.m. and be 2.8 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow on the east side will be at 11:16 a.m. and be 10.4 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 5:59, call it 6 p.m., of minus 1 foot in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 12:16 a.m., just after midnight, of 11.9 feet. Your low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 5:49 a.m. and 3.7 feet, and your high tide in Larsen Bay will be at 11:54 a.m., almost noon, and be 16 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast from Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Friday. Southeast winds to 20 knots this afternoon and seas to 8 feet. Southwest 25 tonight and seas to 11 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 25, seas to 11 feet on our east side. In the Shelikof Strait, east wind to 20 knots today and seas to 4 feet. For tonight, east 15 will turn to the southwest after midnight. Seas remaining at 4 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, west wind to 20 knots, seas to 5 feet. The Kodiak Public Library will be closed tomorrow and Saturday for the New Year's holiday. They do wish to extend to everyone a happy and safe holiday season. Were you born in 1957? There were over 4 million babies born in 1957, making this the largest number of baby boomers born in 1 year. And guess what? They're all eligible for Medicare starting next month. You have a 7-month initial enrollment period when you turn 65 to sign up for Medicare. That's 3 months before your 65th birthday, the month of your birth, and 3 months after. This initial enrollment period is very important, even if you still plan to work and have employer-based insurance. Contact the Senior Center at 486-6181 for more information. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary still have their Angels of Love holiday trees up at the hospital. Each angel placed on the trees bears the name of a person being honored or remembered. The angels remain on the trees through the holiday season and can be obtained for a $10 donation. All donations are placed in the Auxiliary Scholarship Fund to offer scholarships to individuals pursuing a career in healthcare. You can make your donation at the hospital admissions desk. The Coast Guard is reminding mariners that they are experiencing ongoing VHF outages in southeast and south central Alaska. Extra caution is advised in areas serviced by VHF towers. Repairs are ongoing, but due to extreme weather and remote conditions, intermittent outages are expected to continue in various locations in both southeast and south central. Mariners are reminded that due to mountainous terrain and limited coverage, even with fully operational VHF sites, the Coast Guard cannot hear all VHF calls in all areas, and mariners should have a secondary means of communication on board, file a float plan, and carry safety equipment on board in the event you are in a survival situation.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.